Welcome to the Smart Buildings Technology Podcast. Smart Buildings Technology is a media, events, and research platform dedicated to enhancing collaboration across the professional technology ecosystem serving the smart buildings market. Our content is based on the central theme of a smart building, making disparate systems work together effectively. This focus on integration applies across technologies, building systems, a building owner's internal organization, and professional trades serving the smart building. At Smart Buildings Technology, we make intelligent connections. We accomplish this by reaching the entire value chain of building system concept, design, integration, deployment, and management.
Hello, and welcome into the podcast. We're here today with Andrew Blauvelt and Chris Vintner. Andrew is Senior Product Director with Atrius and Acuity Brands. Chris is Product Line Manager with Distech Controls. We're going to be discussing EV charging infrastructure for smart buildings today. I have about 10 questions to ask the panel here. Welcome, Andrew and Chris. I guess I'll start with you, Andrew. Could you tell us a little bit about Atrius and Acuity Brands, and then Chris, also you, with your work with Distech Controls?
Yes, thank you, Matt. We at Atrius provide an energy and sustainability platform that's really layered over top of physical infrastructure like EV charges, smart buildings, and provides a single pane of glass to really understand your total energy usage, your downstream loads that impact your sustainability goals, and really allow you to manage stuff like demand response or, you know, an integrated system to account for your different base loads and how they roll into your top line goals.
Yeah, and thanks again, Matt. I'm product line manager with Distech Controls, responsible for all our software products. Distech Controls has been around for 3 decades, making smart building controllers to control largely starting with HVAC systems, but growing to more systems in a building to include security, access control, and now power management and things like EV chargers, like we're going to talk about today. So really excited to be here.
Okay. Yes. Thanks to both of you. So I'll just dive into the questions, and you guys can tag team, take turns answering, or one or the other, however you want to work that. So my first question is, what are the main challenges for integrating EV charging infrastructure into a smart building, especially in terms of linking it up with the building management system or a building automation system?
You want to start, Andrew? You want me to start?
Yeah, Chris, I think if you could just kind of talk about the integration process and kind of where you're at on the Distech, then I'll layer over top with what we can do from a software perspective.
Yeah, I guess the first challenge oftentimes is the physical infrastructure is not there. Adding EV charging infrastructure usually means adding a bunch of load today in buildings that wasn't expected to be there. So once that portion is handled, and oftentimes it includes a significant capital investment to expand, the amount of load the building's going to handle. And then we're working with a relatively new and emerging technology. So traditionally, our building automation systems speak, languages like BACnet or Modbus, the kind of legacy protocols in buildings. But there are some standards being developed around EV chargers and communication protocols, and making sure our systems are ready to communicate with those, and then also deciding what kind of management routines we're going to do with those systems. So whether that be doing adaptive charging with the chargers to make sure that everybody that's connected to a charger is able to charge, adjusting rates based on the vehicle or based on the duration somebody might be there, and also just managing how that interacts with the rest of the building systems. Obviously, you have critical systems that need to be maintained, and maybe some other systems that could be shed. So it's a complex and interesting new field with demand management.
Yeah, we've kind of run the gamut on these integrations over the, you know, the last decade as they become more prevalent, from putting a gateway talking directly to an inverter that will generally speak Modbus, to building direct API integrations in the cloud. But, you know, standards will help drive consistency. I know, you know, we've seen, you know, from Boston University to Stanford University doing the similar use case, but to get to that level of, you know, consistent execution, you know, we have to build different APIs or put physical hardware. So I think we're, you know, the standards will really help drive, you know, being able to account for those base loads. And, you know, electrification is a big process in a net zero journey. I'm going from scope one to a scope two emissions, which is much, you know, lower carbon intensive. And that really is something that people, you know, their base load might go up, but if you look at it across their different emissions they're accounting for, which would really be scope three, employee commuting, down to a scope two, the reduction is quite high.
Thank you for that. More of a general question, but how does integration and use of EV charging infrastructure affect a building's overall energy costs?
I think, you know, at first glance, the you know, simple outcome is that you're adding more load to a building, so it would increase the total load for the building. That doesn't mean that peak load necessarily has to go up, because these loads can be managed smartly. So we have partners we're working with in the space that are able to adapt the charge rates depending on the amount of chargers that are plugged in or the amount of vehicles that are plugged in. And that way you can adjust or limit the amount of load that charging infrastructure can pull. Some owners may even decide to monetize the use of the chargers to offset those costs, right? So there's a lot of regulations in North America that prevent, you know, selling power because the utilities are regulated. It's regulated in the utility space. However, the way that's been worked around in some municipalities is that you can actually rent the usage of the chargers by time. So however long you're plugged into the charger, that can be monetized. So that can help offset the cost of the extra power. It's also a good place to put excess load, right, that's being generated from renewables. So it doesn't necessarily mean a net increase in energy costs for a building. It could be a source of revenue for that building, or even help be a place to use some of that excess renewable energy that's being generated.
Yeah, I'll also add that with some of our more leading edge clients, we've seen them, you know, installing their own distributed grids that are incorporating that solar into, you know, grid bank, either storage of batteries, fuel cells, and then they are using that to, you know, go and power stuff like EV charging stations and managing that. Yeah, you know, City of Orlando's got a lot published on what they're doing. They're a big partner of ours. And they're really doing their own kind of, you know, micro grid, you know, balancing for this type of load management.
Yeah, and even to further that, if and again, it's a newer technology, but using vehicle to building integration, being able to use the EV battery storage as a source of power for building can actually help reduce and manage peak. So it's a newer technology. It's obviously a more complex integration. You have to understand, you know, can you take power from that vehicle? You know, obviously you wouldn't want to have someone with the expectation of coming back to a vehicle with enough range to get home and find out that the building had taken half their fuel. But in cases, a lot of the time there's excess storage, right? So you can, in off-peak times, you could store a little extra power in those vehicles. And then when you had a peak demand, you can pull it from the vehicle. And actually that's a net cost reduction for that building. So there's some really interesting things in the future using integrated.
Yeah, and it's manifesting in even your smartphone. I mean, I had a really early flight the other week, so I was a little bit annoyed that it was, you know, I had to leave by 4 a.m. And it's like, we'll get to 80% by 4 a.m. because we're going to manage the peak load. But it's kind of that same theory where, you know, if we're all integrated, you know, from a B2C perspective, we can balance the load a lot better rather than trying to do it, you know, at the core, you know, buildings and you know, grid space. If we can integrate these batteries, they just give another tool in the tool belt.
Right. Thank you. Now, when it comes down to EV charging systems becoming more widespread, who's mostly going to be installing and maintaining them? Will that fall to the individual building, or will utility companies be installing them, or are there will it be companies like yours who will be coming in and doing the integration?
I think from an integration and monitoring perspective, we'll definitely be involved in that space. As far as who installs the chargers themselves, it depends on who's providing the power oftentimes. So there are utilities out there that are providing chargers. They're independent third-party charging organizations, just like gas stations that are providing the chargers. There are some buildings that may want to own their own charging infrastructure. You see this a lot with level one chargers now, the ones that really aren't smart chargers. They're not network connected, but they may be provided as a benefit to occupants to have those chargers at the building. Because they operate at a lower power output, they're not as much of a management issue. But I think you're going to see all three different players, maybe even municipalities as well, wanting to provide chargers, especially in business districts that they want to make more accommodations for people with electric vehicles.
Yeah, I would concur that when we've seen these integrations, generally, we're coming in post physical installment of the chargers and more in the integration phase. So, like a charge point's already used their internal or, their partners to install it, and then we'll work either through a physical, integration to the building automation system or, through an API.
And Andrew's team is much more involved in kind of the monitoring, reporting, analysis of data. And I think you're seeing a lot of interest in kind of, because this is a new field, like seeing what is actually happening and monitoring those patterns so we can make adjustments to the infrastructure. Because there's a lot we don't know. So we've seen a lot of these systems with APIs to export data just so we get a better understanding of the patterns of EV charging.
Thank you for that. Again, kind of a basic question, but are there different types of EV charging stations that can be installed? I was reading about how some DC fast charging stations can't support hybrid vehicles, so I was just wondering if what the options were that building owners will be for this type of installation. Sorry.
No problem. I got my first electric vehicle 2 years ago. It's a pretty economical vehicle with decent range, but pretty slow charging speed. So there's a couple of different charger classes. There's the level ones, which are 120 volt. You might get 2 to 5 miles per hour of range on charge. And then you can go up to a level two, which is kind of, your 208, something your dryer or electric appliances at home might plug into. And that's what I have at my home. That's 10 to 30 miles an hour of range. And that's something that's really good for destination charging, a place you're going to leave your vehicle for a period of time. The DC fast charging is, what it says, it's very fast. I think a lot of hybrid vehicles don't support it because their batteries are smaller, so they don't have the need to charge as much. And I think the design of a lot of hybrid vehicles, and again, when I looked to buy my car, I did look at them, is that they're designed to kind of provide that commute where you go around your daily commute, you can return home and charge. So they'd be less likely to need to charge at destination, but not necessarily. And then amongst those chargers, you have the smart network chargers and the non-network chargers. And I think with most of the level two and beyond, they are networked because they are providing more power. They're more likely to have some sort of utility that's charging for the fee because it is a lot more power being delivered. So it's a whole span of different charging stations. In buildings, it seems most of the time we see level two as part of infrastructure, as part of an actual building, the ones you see in a parking spot. DC fast charging, is kind of what you typically see at a charging station, although we may see more of those kind of integrated with buildings.
You need a much higher firepower inverter network for DC versus just an AC.
Yeah, and on the vehicle end as well. I believe the vehicle needs more hardware to accept DC, so it's a higher cost. So for a hybrid vehicle that's really, maybe it's got 20 or 40 miles of electric range and several hundred miles overall, it's really primarily using that gas for its most of its range.
Thanks for that. Yeah, back to the building owner perspective. Like what generally, or can you give us an idea of what the CapEx and OpEx expenditure, what buildings owners can generally expect that to be for installing one of these systems, both now, but also initially, but also ongoing in the future? What's the cost of the system over time?
I think obviously the CapEx in the, like Andrew just mentioned with DC, especially, there's a lot of CapEx in building the inverter system, building the extra service out. As far as OpEx, you know, obviously chargers do require maintenance occasionally. Some of this is handled, if the charger is operated by a third party, the maintenance is often handled by them. You know, if you're providing the chargers as a residential facility, it may be the responsibility of the building owner to maintain them. But I think they require typically less maintenance, is my understanding, than a DC system might, just because it's going to be more heavily used. As far as integration goes in our space, you know, the integration mostly happens at the software level, right? So there's not a ton of hardware that needs to be installed. And once that integration is invested into, it typically can be maintained, you know, little cost. And maybe Andrew, who's been involved with these systems, can speak a little to that.
Yeah, I think for a level two charger, you know, the CapEx is roughly around 6,000 per port. But when we're talking, you know, with our larger customers that are looking at taking this on across the campus, or, you know, a number of buildings, it's much less about the embedded cost and what this adds to their, you know, their CapEx or OpEx, but more just part of an integrated sustainability top-down program that is really focused on net zero, and stuff like, you know, maintaining, you know, your tenants' comforts and what they expect in maintaining, you know, the cost of doing business today. So I would say, you know, generally this is something that you can easily pay for in just, you know, balancing your scope 3 to your scope 2 emissions. It's something that you can really kind of build into your sustainability program, and it will, you know, have the net benefits of, you know, encouraging people to come to your space and to, you know, look at your building as, you know, best in class. And as Chris said, you can also put together, you know, they have smart chargers now that you can actually, you know, swipe a credit card and have be like almost like an ATM for energy right there. If that's OpEx is a big, big issue.
But we are seeing more regulatory pressure too in different municipalities. I think California Title 24 does require EV ready spaces, parking spaces. And then in Vancouver, I believe they actually have, I think it's residential buildings with more than 6 dwelling units need to be EV ready. So it seems like it makes a lot more sense to, when you build a new building, especially, to prepare it for EV charging infrastructure rather than wait and have to go retrofit later.
Understood. You know, Chris, I think you touched on this in one of your earlier answers, talking about balancing the load and everything, but I'll just ask it again. You know, how does a building's interaction with, you know, does implementation of an EV charging system, how does it change a building's interaction with the power grid and the utility companies? You know, what's the trend going to be there for managing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think we're going to see tighter management. Obviously, if you just put 8 level 2 chargers in a building and said they can be used, you know, at full power all the time, it would be hard to predict the load. We do see systems where you can manage multiple chargers on a single circuit. That way you can, you know, set peak limits. So different vehicles, you know, as you add vehicles, they will actually slow down their charging rates. So that way you can maintain a more consistent load. As we talk about more, we talked before about vehicle to building, you know, or vehicle to grid solutions, but in an actual building space, you can even manage the load in the building. We've seen, you know, buildings implement demand response or peak load management strategies. I think EV can all be a part of helping us, especially with vehicle to building solutions in the future. There may also be, as like Andrew was saying, as an ATM, you know, with our power usage, we have time of use rates, and you see that sometimes with vehicles. Sometimes at the charging stations, it's done by you know, the DC charging stations have a higher rate per minute, or that you're on the charger, compared to a level two, maybe a lower rate per minute, knowing that you're going to be consuming a lower peak and less overall kilowatts out of the system. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Another question, maybe the last question, or getting close to wrapping up, but you know, I asked you about the cost, and then Andrew, you came back with the sustainability piece. Is that what's really driving the demand? I mean, when you're out there in the field, I mean, are you, can you kind of sort of gauge the demand for these systems? Are, you know, how many are going in right now with new construction, and how many are being retrofitted in? Just kind of trying to probe your, you know, what you're seeing right now in the industry.
Yeah, I think, as Chris said, it's a hybrid. There's a lot of new regulation coming out requiring this kind of on a per tenant basis. But there's a lot of, and that would, I would think, be driving a majority of the new construction. But on the existing, with forward thinking companies, universities, organizations, it's definitely an integrated part of that overall sustainability journey that's being set at the sea level and cascaded down into this level of actual physical, you know, infrastructure. So we're seeing it at a time. We do a lot of carbon accounting and carbon disclosure, which kind of sets those goals across the different, you know, scopes of emissions. And this is a really good way to reduce your overall carbon footprint. So it's much more top of mind than we've seen at any point in the past.
And it's a super dynamic field right now, because as the charging technology is changing, but so is the vehicle technology, right? We've seen the first electric vehicles that came out with, you know, 60 or something miles of range. And now we have new vehicles with, you know, pushing 400 or 500 miles of range. So the need for that kind of charging in the building for some people has kind of gone away. I know my car, again, it's only got about 260 miles of range. I've had it for 2 years, and I think I've charged it away from home. I could count on two hands probably how many times. So, but 5 years ago, even, it might have been, oh, I really need a charger at work because I can't get home without it. So those kind of things are constantly changing. There's people in a lot of metro areas who may not have chargers at their residence because the infrastructure is not there. So they're really depending on these commercial spaces to have chargers. But like Andrew just mentioned, as more and more regulations come out and they have to require chargers at their dwelling, they may not need those as much. So it's really, really fast moving, a fast moving space. And we'll have to just kind of see how it develops. And at the same time, EV adoption rates are starting to hit a little bit of an inflection point. We've got California, I think Vancouver, for example, are at 15-16% last year. Some of the countries still in the single digits. So it's definitely really, really fast moving, and things are changing the space very quickly.
Are you seeing much federal funding, you know, Department of Energy type stuff like they're doing for other aspects of infrastructure? Are you seeing buildings, you know, and building stakeholders taking advantage of any federal help in spreading EV infrastructure, or has that not come online yet?
I'm not
personally. I'd say nothing that's more than just like a local, you know, a local incentive through the utility program. I haven't seen federal dollars really flowing for our customers as of yet. But there are, you know, certain municipalities and regions that, you know, like through ComEd, through, you know, ComEd, there's a lot of that have these kind of incentives built in. But I have not seen anyone of our customers using really big federal dollars for doing this.
There may be some ways that it can be used kind of as a, you know, through obviously like installing renewables, right? Photovoltaic system. An EV charging system can really benefit that infrastructure, right? The two grid, you can do grid tied solutions, but just to be able to dump the power into the electric vehicle stations may be a simpler solution. So it can be really part of some of these other initiatives. that may be tied to federal incentives. But like Andrew said, I don't know any direct, there may be, but there may, I don't know of any direct programs right now.
Probably more of a question for me, but thank you. I appreciate that. Well, we're coming to the end of the time here. I'd just like to give both of you an opportunity for, in case there was anything key that I didn't ask that you would like to address, or, you know, I guess I could just wrap it up on the point of, you know, top takeaways for building owners who might be considering installing an EV charging system. What are the main things to keep in mind with regard to sustainability, cost, and everything else we talked about here?
You had a question. I think this was asked by someone else to me as well. Like, what makes for a good EV charging station location? And this is just from personal experience. It's whatever makes a good parking spot, right? Like, wherever I want to leave my car for an extended period of time, it'd be nice to be able to charge it there. So when we talk about, obviously, you know, any kind of parking location, if you want to draw a vehicle to that location, when we think about retail, those are good locations. Any place you're already going to be anyway is a great location. So at your house, at your dorm, at your apartment, those are all great spots. They're probably the best spots. Having to, as a driver of an EV, having to go somewhere that I'm not intending to go to charge my vehicle is the least preferable option, right? So that's why home is a great option. You have a charger at home, but anywhere that I'm going anyway. So traditionally, anywhere I'm going to do business or anywhere I'm going to stay, if I'm going on vacation and I'm leaving my car at the hotel, that's a great place for an EV charging spot. So anywhere I'm going to go, anywhere I'm going to park my car normally are the best places.
Is weather and the elements, are they factors that you give consideration to? I mean, you know, moisture, you know, flood, extreme cold. I mean, you know, obviously, I'm sure this is all taken in consideration for the designs and where to locate them. But
yeah, no, it's a good point. I think, you know, EVs at this point are pretty good as far as handling the elements. But batteries do like certain, do prefer certain temperature conditions. They don't like to be too hot. They don't like to be too cold. So obviously, you know, covered parking is better. Parking garages are better. Places that have a little bit of environmental protection. But they don't by any means need, you know, to be surrounded by elaborate temperature control systems to charge ideally. And the car, charge ideally. And the cars now have better technology to condition the batteries on board. So they can handle better extremes in the environment, but yeah, protection from extreme heat like sun is probably a good option.
Understood. Well, I'd like to thank both of you for taking some time here to join us today. And thanks to Atrius and Distech for providing the time for us. Really appreciate you joining us here on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you.